How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. Harrison is out tonight. He was celebrating the Lakers' incredible victory over the Chicago Bulls tonight a little bit too hard, so it's past his bedtime. He is not out with us. I pulled in somebody who people will want to hear about anyway or hear from anyway. It's been a little while. Coach Pete Zayas joins us. How's it going? This is Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room. How's it going, Pete?
I'm great, man. I'm ready to talk playoffs with you, Anthony.
All right, we're even. Before we get into the rest of the show, I want to remind everybody to follow the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLAKERS on both Mack Weldon and SeatGeek to get your discount and rebate, respectively. Let's go ahead and get into this. Basically, the way this show is going to work, the Lakers, I don't know if anybody has noticed, the Lakers are dealing with quite a few injuries up and down their roster. So I'm going to talk to Pete about, you know, the specific ways that that has affected rotations, roles, all those good things. And then I want to bring it back and kind of, I'm not going to say put a spin on it because that's not really our job to put spins on things, but you can't help but notice when they beat the Bulls tonight that's, you know, this feels like a stretch where last year the Lakers definitely go 0-4 and there are questions about, you know, toughness and this and that and the other. There is no such questions. The vibe remains positive around the Lakers. So we're going to try to figure out why that is and what that means for everybody involved. And then at the end, we'll kind of get back to some of the stuff that Pete saw. And I was out tonight dealing with a migraine. But I'll talk to Pete about what he saw from the game that the box score won't necessarily show. So let's go ahead and get into this. Pete, who on the Lakers roster has felt the injuries more than anybody else, would you say?
In terms of the impact on their respective role?
Yes, in terms of what's been expected, who's had to step up the most, would you say, or is there a specific person who's had to step up? And I guess we don't even have to say player. We could involve the coaching staff in this as well.
Yeah, you know, the guy who's come to mind for me is Calderon. He came into the team as a guy who was going to knock down shots and wasn't necessarily going to shot create all of that much for you, but he's going to protect the ball, and he's been really negatively affected by being thrown into the starting lineup in the respect that there isn't a whole lot of shot creation in the starting lineup outside of him, especially with Nick Young being out as well. They had Ingram start in his place, who provides a little bit in that respect. But then in the front court, you got Dang and Randall and Mozgov. And even in Randall's case, he's more of a shot creator in transition than he is in the half court. And so Calderon's been turning the ball over coming into this game, he had the highest turnover rate on the team. And I don't think this game helped that as well. He's being put in a position where he's asked to create more plays than he's really capable of at this point. And in a lot of respects, he's more of a glorified shooting guard at this point than he is a point guard, although he can't really defend the position. So even though he went, you know, I think 3 for 4 is what he shot tonight, he had a pretty rough stretch on the court, and the bench has been charged with, you know, digging the starters out of double-digit holes multiple times this season. I think this was their 5th or 6th win that they've won while being down, you know, double digits in the first half. So he's the guy that really stands out to me as someone who is being negatively impacted, despite the fact that he's getting playing time. It's not in a role that serves him well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the box score again, and yeah, what jumps out to me is Calderon only plays 17 minutes, and in that time was a minus 16. And plus minus is a flawed stat. It's not a great stat. You know, it's highly based on the guys around him that he's playing with and playing against. But that's not a great sign in a game that the Lakers wind up winning, right? And you kind of look at the bench and Lou Williams in 28 minutes was a plus 20. Jordan Clarkson in 34 minutes was a plus 13. And those are the guys who, you know, you're looking at the kind of backcourt that the Lakers hope to be, you know, to unleash against the teams that they're playing against, even with D'Angelo Russell out. That plus 13, that plus 20 is pretty indicative of guys who are in roles that they're comfortable in and continue to be put in a spot where they can be successful in. I don't think there's a scenario in which Jose Calderon was going to be successful as a starting point guard in the NBA this season.
Yeah. Yeah, when you look at the net rating of the starting lineup with Russell in it versus the starting lineup with Calderon in it, and it's a 29-point difference per 100%. So, yeah, I mean, not much more needs to be said.
Yeah, and this isn't to say that, you know, this isn't necessarily a knock on Calderon. It's that this isn't the role that the Lakers anticipated he would play, or this isn't the role that he anticipated he would have to play. These are just the things that happen when injuries occur. Is there anybody else that comes to mind tonight? What again jumps off of the, you know, jumps off the screen at me when I'm looking at the box score? Brandon Ingram starts and plays 41 minutes, and I look down the box score, and there's Jimmy Butler playing 40 minutes. It seems like, based on those two things, that Luke Walton was you know, kind of testing his rookie out there, and it's kind of cool to see that he kind of came through in such a test.
Yeah, he was tremendous on the defensive end. I mean, his offensive struggles continue. His one make was an impressive make, and it was an and one at the rim, which I don't remember too many of those this season for him, that he finished with his left hand, which has been a struggle for him. What's very encouraging about him is that he will get a step on the defender, and he will get himself into an advantageous position, which not everybody can do. But it'll be nullified by him having to come back to his right on a fairly regular basis. And so that, of his 1 of 9, the one was very impressive. But on the defensive end, I thought it was his best defensive game of the season. He was the Lakers switched. They switch a lot on a regular basis, but they switched more than they normally do, and they had their communication on the defensive end was much better than I've seen it before, and Ingram was central to that. And even his box score numbers might not show it, but I thought it was a really strong effort, and I think it speaks a lot to his contribution on the defensive end that Luke trusted him in playing the most minutes that any Lakers played in any game this season.
Yeah, it's funny. When you think of games that kind of launch guys into Rookie of the Year contention, right? Usually you think of it as like a 30-point scoring game, or a triple-double, a big double-double, or a few double-doubles in a row, whatever it might be. You don't normally think of 1 of 9 shooting for 8 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, a block. Those aren't the kind of stats that's going to open very many people's eyes. But again, when you consider the fact that he, you know, went up against an MVP candidate, and that's what Jimmy Butler has been this year, and held Jimmy Butler to 22 points on 18 shots and 13, you know, and you know, Butler gets to the free throw line 15 total times tonight. That's a whole bunch of possessions to get only 22 points. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, won't necessarily get the casual fan all that excited, but Laker fans as a whole should look at that and say, holy cow, this guy is doing this as a rookie. That's impressive.
I think that, you know, Laker fans and just basketball fans in general, with all of the media that's available to them, are becoming more sophisticated over time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think that a fan with any degree of sophistication, when they watch the games, Brandon Ingram helps the Lakers win. Mm-hmm. And that's before he even really knows what he's doing on the offensive end. You know, and tonight was a perfect example of that. You know, his ability to – his combination of length, IQ, and agility is very, very, very rare. And mm-hmm. on a team – and this team is also very good for him in that he – is lacking in some areas regarding his footwork and his just his overall skill set. And I think he's really going to benefit from a summer with a skills coach. But being surrounded by, you know, several other guys, kind of dynamic guards on that bench unit with Lou and Clarkson, D'Angelo when he's healthy, even Julius Randle, kind of the offensive end is covered. But he really asserted his will and put his stamp on this game on the defensive end in a game in a way that, you know, few 19-year-olds I've ever seen capable of doing as a perimeter defender, you know. So Laker fans should be very excited. You know, in terms of rookie of the year discussion, I put Embiid in kind of a separate category. He's probably going to win it, but he's a third-year player in some ways, mm-hmm. Despite not having floor time in the first 2 years. I think there's a lot to be said with being in the NBA and being in an organization. But amongst the 2016 rookies, I'd be hard-pressed to find a guy who's having a more real in-game impact than Ingram is.
I completely agree. And it's kind of funny. I have a couple points that kind of come to mind while you were talking there. Kawhi Leonard wasn't asked to do a whole bunch when he was a rookie offensively with the Spurs. And they just kind of said, hey, just go focus on the defense. We know what you're best at. We know what you're capable of over there. Make your impact on that end, and we'll try to figure it out on offense as it comes. And it's kind of interesting that and that was the Spurs, you know, and that's what with as explosive an offense that the NBA has really seen with those Spurs teams, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers in this kind of situation are kind of doing the same kind of thing where, you know what, offensively we're set. Go do what we know that you're best at right now, and the offense is going to come. And we saw the results of that so far with Kawhi Leonard. Now, the dumb NBA fans out there are going to kind of say, well, Kawhi Leonard is a system player and this and that and the other. But at the end of the day, if you want a small forward on your team, you're not going too far down the list before you get to, yeah, I want Kawhi Leonard on the team that I'm starting. And if, you know, Brandon Ingram, if the Lakers are somehow able to groom Ingram in the same manner, that's a pretty nice model to fit, you know, if you're hoping to have a good career in the NBA. And then the other thing that I kind of wanted to pick your brain about, because this is something I've noticed with Ingram's drives to the basket and just dribbling in general. One thing, he's almost 7 feet tall, so his dribble is always going to be higher than it should be. Mm-hmm. But what I have noticed is that he's still taking, I would say, a dribble too much on each of his drives, where he seems a little too interested in drawing contact. He's more interested in drawing contact than actually making the basket. You know, mm-hmm. and you talked about how rare it is that he made an and one, especially with his left hand. But I think that's created from, you know, not necessarily trying to score versus trying to get the foul. Have you noticed him over-penetrating on his drives? And that feels like the kind of thing that all rookies are going to deal with NBA speed.
I'm actually working on a video right now in which a significant portion of it is going to be about Ingram's over-penetration. Yes, very much yes. He finds himself in a lot of situations where his misses are matters of decision-making rather than – it's easy to attribute, oh, you know, maybe when he packs on more weight, he's going to make these shots, or, you know, when he gets more experience and more reps – when he gets more experience and more reps, he's going to realize that that's a bad shot and not take it at all. One thing that I'd like to see him develop, and I don't have much expectation for it to happen anytime soon, but when he beats a guy either off of a, say, off of a pick and roll, and his defender goes over the screen, keeping that man on his hip and putting him in jail, so to speak, is the basketball terminology for it. And then keeping him behind him, you see D'Angelo do this pretty well. And then shooting that little mid-range, you know, 10-footer in the paint. What he's doing on those plays is he's driving into the body of a defender who the entire strategy of their pick and roll coverage is for that big to wait back in the paint and protect the rim. So yeah, he's going to end up double clutching and shooting a difficult shot that really has no chance of going in. And there are little just elements to his skill set, like putting a guy in jail and being able to knock down that little leaning shot from 10 feet away, for example, that I don't have the expectation that's going to happen anytime soon, but that is going to help eliminate that over-penetration that you're seeing.
It's kind of funny. You have to kind of teach yourself to be athletic. You know, I feel like Russell Westbrook at this point has a decent understanding of what his body can do. Like, if he's driving to the basket, he's taking off from places that most people don't even consider taking off from, and he's doing that because he trusts his athleticism. Now, at times, he trusts his athleticism a little too much. But being able to take off from those places and get up in the air before the defense has time to react is something that athletes, you know, kind of learn as they go along. And I think with Ingram, when I watch him play, I don't think he necessarily trusts how athletic he is. And I think he could take off from a step or two further out, and that that forces the defense to react, you know, a half a second sooner than they're necessarily ready to. And it also gives him more time in the air to adjust to whatever the defense kind of does. I don't know if that made any sense for you there.
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. And I think that, you know, people forget this is a guy that's 2 years removed from high school.
Absolutely.
You know? And in environments like that, his length and his natural physical attributes allow him to do things incorrectly, meaning that he can still be successful with the incorrect fundamentals, with not being comfortable in his own body, in his own like you said, the knowledge of his own individual athleticism. Those are all things you can get away with when you're just that much more talented than everybody else, and that's true to a lesser degree at Duke, but in the NBA that's not going to be the case. And that's what's kind of brilliant about what Luke has done with Ingram. Going back to your point about Kawhi, is that Ingram's responsibilities on this team, in that what he's depended upon for, is on the defensive end. It's very similar to what you said about Kawhi. Mm-hmm. But by putting the ball in his hands as often as Luke has on the offensive end, he's put Ingram in the position to explore this sounds like a health class, to explore his body, right? to explore what he can do and what he can't do physically, along the lines of what you're saying, right? Of knowing, hey, I can take off from this spot, or I can jump off of 1 foot when I'm going to my left and finish with my left, and it's going to be okay. You know, that's the type of bucket that he got tonight. And so he's doing what he needs to help the Lakers win on the defensive end, but he's also getting reps on the offensive end in ways that aren't going to bear fruit now, but they will either later in the season or in future years of his career, whereas he's not just drifting around on the perimeter, standing in the corner waiting for a kick out.
I'm picturing right now Luke Walton pulling Brandon Ingram into his office, and with that deep, you know, drawling voice that he has, "Brandon, I need you to explore your body." You know,
yeah.
I would love to be in the room as that happened, with like Jesse Mermes in the background saying like, "Yeah, bro, you got this, man. You're way more athletic than you think you are, bro." Oh, yep. this is something that needs to show up on Backstage Lakers, for example. Spectrum, where you at? So we talked about the adjustments that the injuries have forced on the players, and we'll get back to, because I think there are a couple other players who have been forced to adjust as well. But the other thing that, you know, bears mentioning, and you already talked about Luke Walton, you know, and Brandon Ingram's self-exploration, but Luke has made it a priority that, you know, no matter what injuries come up in that, you know, with that starting lineup, he has made it, you know, his strategy has been, all right, this bench is really, really good. This bench has to get as many minutes as they can together. I don't know, did you happen to catch my theory on where that might be coming from? Like, it was on this last show, so I don't know if you heard it.
No, I didn't.
Long story short, the talent level is the talent disbursement across the Lakers roster isn't that extreme to where you have, you know, superstars at the top and then like really bad players at the bottom, and you know the superstars have to be played so many more minutes than the guys down at the bottom of the roster. And so I kind of think where Luke is going with playing the bench he has, or by using the bench the way he has, he's kind of saying, all right, we're going to try to tread water as best we can with whichever starters we play, but we know this is our best lineup, so we want to play that best lineup as many minutes as we can against the lesser lineups that we might face night to night. And if he, you know, by continuing to stick with that, you know, you're going to see the Lakers, you know, finish first quarters. Tonight they finished the first quarter down 17-28. But then in the second quarter they come back and they outscore the Bulls 30-19. And that I believe, you know, is something that Luke continues to want to, you know, fall back on as a strategy. Have you agreed with his decision to stick with it through the injuries?
I mean, how couldn't I? You know, the results speak for themselves. It's really amazing the you know, the schedule, the injuries, and they're 10-10. You know, it's been the most fascinating part of this season, is seeing how he's placed such a great emphasis on, you know, a 5-man lineup is almost its own organism in and of itself. You know, and how it and it needs to be treated as a whole rather than five different guys that, oh, we just plug this in and break it up and, you know, we'll figure it out. They've played the most of any 5-man unit off of the bench by a mile compared mm-hmm. to any team in the league. And you know, I'm someone, I place a great priority on trying to learn more about the game as often as I can. And it's something that's been really eye-opening to me. I almost wonder if it's going to, if other teams and other coaches are going to follow suit in placing this degree of emphasis on the importance of 5-man units, to the point where that, you know, they'll have two, sometimes three guys starting that aren't even really in the rotation. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And you know, you got a Thomas Robinson the other night starting. You've got Calderon or you know, what have you, starting when they're not even normally playing. Now, the flip side to that is that he's got to find a better combination with the starters. It's not sustainable to be able to go down, you know, double digits at the end of the first quarter. It's just not. And if they want to continue to have success, I have a great deal of concern about the shot creation that's in the starting lineup right now. But I also don't have great alternatives. My one thing that I'd like to see is Huertas in place of Calderon. But you know, I tweeted out earlier today that you know, Calderon's play has got me thinking about Huertas like an ex, where you just only remember the good parts about him and you forget how crazy they were. And so I'm kind of thinking of Huertas as a shot creator that can get guys open, and you know, maybe not remembering all of the jump pass turnovers and terrible defense even compared to Calderon. But he's got to find a better combination with the starters.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And if Nick Young was, you know, set to be out longer than the 2 to 4 weeks that he is, or that, you know, the Lakers training staff is predicting that he is going to be, I would say that, yeah, it's probably time to really start fiddling with, you know, does Clarkson start? Does Lou Williams start? Does whoever, you know, do you kind of break up that bench? And to a certain extent, you know, you don't want to, you know, just rely on results-based analysis, because that tends to be kind of lazy. But, and this is weird, we haven't been able to say this over the last couple of years, I trust the Lakers head coach.
Yeah.
You know, you watch him tonight. Last night I said specifically after the Lakers got blown out by the Pelicans that, yeah, I think it might be time, if Nick is going to miss considerable time, that it's probably time to start, you know, breaking up the bench unit and dispersing their minutes along with the starting lineup. But one thing I kind of thought of after I went on the rant that I went on, and after, you know, Harrison and I had the conversation that we had, was every single lineup that Luke puts together feels like it has a purpose. You know, yeah. It's you know, if the team is giving up a certain kind of shot, he seems to go to with the lineup that is able to produce that kind of shot the most consistently. And the one thing I don't think Luke is going to fall victim to is change for the sake of change. You know, it's you have to let change, you know, you can't just go back to change just because, yeah, it's just going to work out. I don't see him doing that. And tonight, winning the way they did kind of goes back to the benefit of not falling victim to desiring change for the sake of change.
Yeah, no, he's very, very purposeful in what he does. And even, you know, tonight, a lot of us were curious what he was going to do in the starting lineup. And putting Ingram at the two, it became apparent after the game started that, oh, you know, he's replacing Nick Young's defense more than anything. You know, that ability to defend a guy on the way. Isn't that a weird sentence?
I couldn't help but laugh, yeah.
Yeah, but hey, this is the 2016-17 Lakers, man. You know, it's cats living with dogs. You know,
this is 2016 as a, you know, just summed up, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I heard. I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan, but I heard today that 2016 was the Ramsay Bolton of years. Yep. So
yeah.
Anyhow. I agree. So yeah, man. It just. He's very purposeful in what he does. And I think that he, you know, he's going to stick with that bench lineup. And I, you know, that's one of the hardest things to do is to find, like, yes, this group of five really works well together. And the individual pieces matter less than the behavior of the overall group. The one thing that I'd add to that is I thought that Thomas Robinson played really well in Tarik Black's place with that same group of five. Tonight, Black had a little bit of foul trouble. And Robinson, one thing the Lakers did in this game was that they were more aggressive on the pick and roll in terms of blitzing the pick and roll than they've been in previous games, which isn't something that you can do on a play-by-play basis. But with the foot speed of guys like Randall, Nance, Black to some extent, and Robinson – they can do that from time to time, and I thought it was really effective. So I'm curious to see, you know, one thing that they did in Golden State was they'd get Bogut, Azili, and Spates minutes, which it's difficult to get three guys minutes at the same position, but I'm curious to see if they're able to do that with Mozgov, Black, and Robinson, who's been playing very well.
Yeah, it's great to see, you know, because we had the conversation – When the roster was being set before the season started of, well, will Yee stick around? Will Anthony Brown stick around? He wound up not, and both those guys wound up not sticking around, and the Lakers wound up going with Robinson. And again, I come back to the fact that everybody on this roster right now serves a purpose, you know, mm-hmm. Other than, I guess you could argue Huertas, because Calderon seems to be taking up the bulk of the minutes in D'Angelo Russell's stead. Everybody on the roster serves a purpose, and even Metal World Peace, whose minutes have been laughable this year. Like, every time he gets into the game, it's like, okay, yeah, this one's probably over one way or the other. But he's on the team specifically to teach defense, you know, to the young guys, to work with Julius Randle on how to, you know, use his body strength, to work on Brandon Ingram, I would imagine, to, you know, on figuring out angles and how to do that in the NBA. So everybody on this Lakers team serves a purpose. And even when you look at somebody like Thomas Robinson, who surprised everybody and found a way to the roster this year. Here he is coming up, you know, fairly big. He only played 9 minutes, and he played, you know, he had 2 points, 6 rebounds, whatever. His line is whatever it's going to be, but in 9 minutes he was a +7, you know, and you know, for somebody who just kind of steps in when Tarik Black gets into that foul trouble, that's pretty impressive that he's just stayed ready like that, and Luke trusted Robinson to stay ready and rewarded him with the minutes when he had to.
Yeah.
I guess my last kind of note here, and I'm biased. I will completely cop to being biased in this respect, but usually I'm pretty nuanced when it comes to awards. You know, I hate the phrase, and nobody else is really close, you know, because somebody is always close. When someone says, you know, LeBron James is the MVP of the season and nobody's really close, that's just not true. You know, it's typically speaking, there are people who are close who belong in that conversation as well. With Luke Walton's coaching this year, I can't come up with anybody who deserves more Coach of the Year praise than Luke deserves. And it's not the typical, you know, decent coach with a bad roster squeaks into the playoffs. This is somebody who is developing a culture from the ground up with kids that are learning on the fly, with an entire team learning really complicated defensive rotations, really complicated offensive sets, you know, making these adjustments on the fly, not just in the game, but game by game as guys go down and get back into the roster. I will completely cop to being biased, but I don't think it's close here with Luke.
No, it's not. And it's, you touched on it. It's across the board, right? It's, you've got some coaches that, you know, come in and you want them to change the culture, right? And you've got other coaches that, hey, we need a tactician that really improves the X's and O's and the schemes that we run on both sides of the ball. You've got other coaches who are like, hey, we got this group of young guys that we need to show them how to be professionals. And we've got these young guys that we need some great skill development with them. And he's been all of those things. He and his staff, of course. There are very rare instances in sports even where you can say that with some degree of possibility that a coach has a chance to coach somewhere as long as he wants to. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of those situations, one of those very rare spots where I think this is Luke's for as long as he wants it. He's the real deal. And I have my things here and there where like, oh, I wish he'd do this more, I wish he'd do that more. But
it's nitpicking.
It's nitpicking. It's absolutely nitpicking. And having even just a small taste on my end of the responsibilities that go into a head coaching position at much lower levels of basketball, there are so many things that he has to be on top of, and more importantly, have an understanding of how that piece interacts with another piece and the synergy of all of the different components of a team, that this is a masterful job that he's doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think of the game from a coaching perspective. I think of it, you know, to a lesser extent from a player's perspective, but I mean, even when I was playing, I wanted to be a coach when I was playing, and now I kind of analyze the game from having been a coach, and you do the same thing. You are Coach Pete Zayas, so I guess that's just kind of how you're going to watch it. And yeah, I could sit here and talk about Luke Walton all day. Look, I'll just paint you a picture of a scenario, and this is the scenario that the Lakers came into. This is the second night of a back-to-back. This is the second game in a stretch of 4 games of 5 nights. This is a really wacky road trip in terms of the type of travel that the team has to go through. They just lost another key cog after having missed, they're now down 2 starters for now, the first time or not really the first time. They've been dealing with starters being in and out of the lineup and trying to deal with this. They're playing against a potential playoff team who has had plenty of momentum to deal with this year. Over the last 2 seasons, there is no chance in any kind of scenario where the Lakers win that game. There's none. None whatsoever, you know, and I, you know, it's easy to kind of come back to, and this is the tendency that kind of happens in analysis where things are happening that we can't quite understand. So we just kind of say, well, it's the coach. It has to be the coaching, right?
Right.
We appeal to the authority in that sense. But and so, you know, with having said that, you got to credit the players for staying positive and still sticking to whatever Luke is selling them. But again, it is Luke selling them that, you know, and these players continue to come back to the fact that, yes, we trust our coach. We trust our guy. He would die for us. We see him working his tail off for us. We're going to continue to work our tail off for him, and the results will come, and the results continue to come. Tonight being one of those situations that they just would not – there's no – I'm not crazy here, right? There's no way they win this game over the last couple of years.
Not a chance. And I also think, you know, it's easy to give – Luke as much credit, and he deserves all of it. I am very impressed with the professionalism of the young guys on the team. There is one thing Luke mentioned in his post-game comments about how they wanted to switch. They wanted to take Julius Randle off of Taj Gibson in this game in terms of as a defensive assignment. And because Gibson really hurt them in the previous game, and he did a great job of establishing deep post position. And, you know, I can't speak to all of the reasons why he wanted to make that switch, but Gibson definitely got the better of Randle in that first matchup. And Randle was apparently insistent that he stayed on Gibson, and he went out there and he showed it. The first couple possessions of the game, even my eyebrow raised watching Randle dig in getting a great stance against Gibson in the post, and he hedged well on a couple screens. His defense was very much jumped off the screen for me in the first few plays of the game, and there's just a degree of professionalism amongst the young guys. And to the point, your point about there's no way they win this game in the last 2 years, even further than that, it would have been totally okay for them to lose this game this year and now, right? Mm-hmm. Your backcourt.
Yeah. I didn't think they were going to win. I had there was no chance I thought they would win this game tonight.
And then they go down after the first quarter, 28-17. And I was watching it fully expecting there to be a loss. And, you know, there would have been some grumbling and groaning and whatnot had they lost the game. But overall, it wouldn't have been a shock at all. It was my expectation level, especially after that first quarter. And it would have been easy for the young guys on the team to kind of pack it up and be like, okay, we got tomorrow off. You know, we'll get them on Friday. But that wasn't it at all. And this was a beautifully ugly win. You know, they only shot 8 threes. They turned the ball over a season high 24 times. But they got 60 rebounds against the best rebounding team in the NBA. You know, it was something that if you've got that sort of dedication from your Randles, your Nances, your Ingrams, your Clarksons, and all of them before the age of 25, when this team hits that, you know, where most of them are in that 25 to 28 window, my goodness, because that professionalism is the component that not every young guy in the NBA has. And I think that the Lakers' young core has it in spades, and I'm just incredibly impressed by it.
When you're talking about professionalism as a culture, doesn't that sound like something you would say about the Spurs?
Yeah.
And so the other thing that I was thinking while you were talking about Randle being challenged or not challenged, but Walton saying how, you know, Taj just might not be the kind of matchup that's best suited for Julius Randle. Doesn't that sound like something Phil would do?
Yeah. Oh, it's a total mind game. Yeah. It's like
doesn't it's kind of one of those things where like Luke is having a conversation with Brian Shaw, and he has the door cracked open just enough,
right,
you know, and
right,
he plans for Randle to walk by as he's saying that. That sounds like something, you know, that Phil would have done. And for people who continue to harp on when's Phil coming back, man, this is the kind of stuff that you want to see. You know, these are the seeds that are planted, and this is what happens. This is how Phil Jackson is born. You know, I'm not saying that Luke Walton is going to have the incredible career that Jackson did, but you can see, you know, the little tidbits that Phil left behind, and Luke Walton said that he, you know, Phil Jackson was a major mentor, and this is one of those instances where you really directly see that influence.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, and a guy like Julius Randle is built to take that as a challenge. You know, and that's that is almost certainly a button that Luke was very well aware of the whole time in saying that.
Absolutely. All right. Last tidbit on Randle that I noticed while I was looking at the box score, and everybody's going to look at the 20 rebounds and you know the double double and you know whatever you're going to notice from the game, but. You know, Randle gets challenged, and you look down that box score, and Taj Gibson has a very, you know, ho-hum game of 11 points, 10 rebounds, and fouled out. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that you know, you kind of look back on. You're not going to remember this, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, but this is definitely one of those steps in the right direction that the Lakers want to look at as a whole when they're trying to build this culture.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is that Randle didn't even particularly play well in this game. Mm-hmm. 20 rebounds are 20 rebounds, of course, but mm-hmm. he was pretty out of control on a number of plays, but it just really goes to show how far just playing hard can take you, you know, even if the execution isn't there.
Right. I mean, I kind of feel like those out of control plays are something that Luke kind of prepared himself for, you know, mm-hmm. if he's going to put that challenge out there, any kind of challenge is going to incite some kind of emotional reaction.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of think that, you know, just the challenge was to, yeah, get Randle to go out there and play hard, to see what he can do against Taj Gibson, who did get the better of him. And then the out of control plays were just kind of going to happen. All right, well, this was a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun. It's always particularly fun when Harrison isn't around to bring down the conversation. But we'll have to challenge Harrison to make the conversation next time. Okay. I'll leave the door open to my office as he walks by next time. I always really appreciate you coming on the show. It's always a whole bunch of fun. I look forward to the next time we talk.
Awesome, Anthony. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Before we go, make sure everybody follows the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers for SeatGeek and Mack Weldon, and we will talk to everybody again tomorrow. Shouts to Larry Spriggs!